You're now listening to Real Estate Journeys with Matthew Baltzell.
Yeah. What's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B. Welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for real estate investors looking to grow their brand and their business. So on today's episode, guys, we have a special guest. Her name is Karen Briscoe, and she is the principal of Huckabee Briscoe Conroy Group HBC and the author of Real Estate Success in 5 Minutes a Day. Over the years, the group has sold over 1,000 homes valued at over $1 billion. Karen and her family are active members of the Trinity United Methodist Church in McLean, Virginia, their home since 1994. Karen, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I love the title of Breakaway, because when people break away and create wealth, then they obviously have choices like you.
Yeah.
And so I love these conversations.
Yeah. So for those listening right now, Karen is very involved in the real estate community, and she's one of the premier real estate agents. And like I said, she's written the Real Estate Success in 5 Minutes a Day. And I wanted to bring you on and pick your brain a little bit about, you know, your career and how you got into real estate. Could you give the listeners a little bit more about your background and how you got into real estate?
Well, I actually started in commercial in Dallas, which is where I think part of your all's group is based in. And I did residential lot development for a major developer, Trammell Crow. And that was fascinating because you learn about value and market trends because you're projecting into the future. And that's what all real estate investors are trying to do, right? The idea is, like Wayne Gretzky, go to where the puck is going, because that's where the market's going. So that was a great basic knowledge and skills and abilities. Our family ended up in the Washington, D.C. metro region with my husband's career, and spent a number of years raising our children. So I was out of the workforce, reentered the workforce in 2001, and worked for Nextel, so a technology company, in their real estate portfolio, doing sales, engineering, and warehouse offices. So don't know if you remember 2001, but that was a tech bust. Uh-huh. And when there's a bust in an industry, then there's disposition. And I'm just telling you that there is no money or fun in disposition. So I moved over to the residential side, and what the skills I acquired in the commercial side, what I call the hard skills, negotiations, market knowledge, strategy, trend analysis, I was able to take over to the residential side. I found that I love the relationships, the people. And I end up working with a lot of investors because they see that I have that skill sets from the commercial side, but I have been building a business in the residential side. We had some great years where the market was just running up like crazy, which impacted the entire economy when it crashed in 08, and have rebuilt the business since then. And this year, we're having one of our best years in, I'm going to say, almost all time, but I got to be careful about that, because the last time we went through this, right, it was like cresting, and they were like going, okay, when is the shoe drop? When is the market crash? It doesn't look like it's the same kind of condition. So, so just having that awareness, that knowledge, that institutional knowledge of being through several market cycles really brings a lot of value in terms of trying to predict trends and where markets are going. So
definitely.
And doing a number of transactions too, because most real estate agents do 3 a year. And when you do hundreds of them a year, you start seeing what's going on in the market before it actually happens.
Yeah, that's good for sure. So somebody that's been in commercial and residential, for someone that's in real estate or looking to get into real estate or scale their business, what is a good way to go about developing relationships with brokers? Because I know a lot of people are struggling with, how do I get in? How do I get good deals from a broker? How do I do this? So I want to hear what your advice would be for someone that's starting out looking to, you know, assuage a realtor and get on their good side. How would somebody go about doing that?
Well, if you're looking for a broker, the first thing I would look for is someone who has experience investing in what it is you want to invest in, whatever category, asset class. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not doing it themselves, then they're really not invested in understanding the process and the and everything that goes into it, because different asset classes are going to have different, like, for example, my son does shopping center developer. It's a completely different knowledge base than multifamily or mm-hmm. just single family or industrial or all the different aspects of real estate. And so, first of all, if they're not investing in themselves, then they may not have the what you're looking for, knowledge, skills, and ability. The next thing I would say is, once you find the realtor, is to listen to them. Because it's amazing to me that, you know, I do this every day and people will try to tell me something that it's kind of like Dr. MD, right? Uh-huh. That they go on the internet, you know, the doctors.
Yeah, the WebMD doctor, yeah.
Yeah, WebMD. I'm like, okay, so you didn't go to medical school and yet you're going to take the information from the internet and question. And I'm not saying there aren't situations where it's good to bring up questions, and I'm always open to that. But at the same time, somebody who does it professionally every day is they're bringing intuitive knowledge that you may not be able to quantify and qualify in a way that is somebody who only does it every once in a while. And so if you're a new investor, that means you probably are new to this. So I would trust what your advisor is saying. And then,
can you give me a specific example of like something like that might be, I'll say some easy advice where somebody might flip that on you?
So what often happens is when people decide to enter into the arena, then they start getting information from a lot of different sources. So everybody's got an opinion, mm-hmm. right? Again, back to even the internet opinion. Markets are so location specific and location driven. And just because somebody's brother-in-law does it in California doesn't mean that it's going to work in this market segment, or that we'll have the same, maybe even the same terms or the same deal structure or the same payout. Or so this is where I find that a lot of times people, they get stuck because they're getting information from too many places. So be mm-hmm. mindful about where you're getting the information. Now, totally do your due diligence. I'm not saying just to take the first real estate agent and, you know, sign up and give them your money. But at the same time, be mindful of who's giving the advice, right? So if it's a casual investor and they don't have the experience, the person who has experience, let's go with them. And the analogy is just like any kind of specialist field. So again, back to the doctor analogy, because that's the easiest one to explain. You go to an internist, here's something with your heart. You go to a cardiologist, you're going to have more credence and value to what the cardiologist says than what the internist says, or what WebMD says. Okay. And then be prepared. So I have a lot of times investors will come to me and they're like, yeah, I want to get into a deal, but they haven't gotten their financial life in order. They're not really prepared to meet the terms of the agreement of what it takes. Mm. And so that's even if you want to start small. So many people start small in the residential space and they buy their first property and then, you know, the next property, and then they start having a portfolio, and then they want to maybe do a 1031 exchange or something and move into a different kind of asset class. That's a lot of logistics. So
yeah,
I had this happen recently. I'm going to do a 1031 exchange. They did it backwards, though. They identified the property. They hadn't sold the property they have. I'm like, okay, you haven't even talked to your CPA. You are, again, getting information that is now causing, well, first of all, it's not going to work because they did it backwards. So, but what I'm saying is,
you're thinking it's backwards.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, we got to undo that. And then we're going to have to go back to square one. But first of all, you have to talk to your CPA. And then you're going to have to get an intermediary and all of these criteria in order to meet a 1031 exchange in order to have that work if you're in U.S. assets and you want to use that for income tax. And I'm not a CPA or financial advisor. But what I see is people will start doing things and you're like going, wow, at some point we need to have a little bit more perspective and a bigger picture on how this is going to then play out.
So would it be safe to say that the first thing that agents are looking at, investors, is having a solid investment criteria, kind of letting them know what they're looking for in order to be deemed more credible?
I definitely work with new investors. It's not like I don't anticipate that, you know, somebody wants to start, and I've helped many people start in investing, and I believe, I'm a firm believer in it. And I always say, when people say, when should I start investing? I'm like, well, now, today. I mean, it's like, when should you have planted a tree? You should have planted it 20 years ago. So I'm a firm believer in it, and most agents are willing to work with new investors. It's just be mindful of those in terms of, you said, how would you then get on their deal list? Well, they're going to get, the people that are going to get the first priority for the deal list are the ones that have done their homework, are prepared, and are ready to move when it happens. Because if it really is a deal, it's probably going to move quickly. Mm-hmm. So starting to get ready then is going to be, you're going to miss it. So opportunity happens, you want to be ready. So if you're at that point in your financial journey and you want to create wealth through real estate, which is what is how many, many people do create wealth. It's one of the, that and entrepreneurship and other avenues. But one of the ways many, many people do is real estate. And they usually do start with single family, and then they will build that portfolio and then move that into other asset classes. But people very rarely start with commercial real estate unless you're doing some sort of syndication or limited partnership, mm-hmm. which is a different discussion.
Different model in itself, yeah. So
yes,
if you're brand new and you're reaching out to a real estate agent and you're saying you should partner up, or you should find an agent that is, let's say you're doing the Burr method or you're looking to fix and flip, you should find an agent that is doing that themselves. Is that correct?
Or has done it with other clients. I don't know if I would necessarily want to be the practice, you know, case. That doesn't mean that there isn't situations where it's usually what I call accidental. People usually get into that type of investing accidentally, like they end up with a property that a family member has, or they know of a deal because of a friend or whatever, and so then they want to get into it. I've also, flipping is another whole segment of the industry, and my business partner's husband flips houses, and so I have enough knowledge to be dangerous. But buying right is the most important thing. That's probably true with almost any investment, right? If you buy it correctly, then. But what often happens with people is that they don't have the ability to, if the market shifts, to hold through it. So that it is in all of the categories, I find, can be the one that catches people, because unless you're the contractor and you have control over who's doing the work and the costs, then that's where I find sometimes the flipping and there's too much HDTV. It looks a lot glamorous than it is.
I could definitely attest to that. My mother and I, we had I was helping her manage a portfolio of about 10 single family homes back in 2008, just kind of like mom and pop. And then, you know, we were in Denver, and then one thing led to another, and then one person wasn't paying the rent, and then another person wasn't paying the rent. And then when you're, you know, kind of doing it on your own, you're floating four mortgages, and you're like, okay, like this one's going under, this one's going under. Like, let's sell this one. Okay, you want to buy this? Like, just get rid of them all as fast as possible. Definitely being able to not be in that position is definitely a good thing.
Well, what I see with flippers is they have their projections based on, okay, they're just going in and, you know, doing the basic remodel and then going to flip it. Well, they may get in there and find out the sewer line has to be replaced, or the county, restrictions for certain improvements has changed, or the county process is delayed. And so then every month that gets added to that, right, adds to the cost of the carry cost. And then the market can shift. And that, because a lot of times the spreads are pretty, pretty tight on them, it doesn't take much for to be upside down pretty quickly.
So so let's say you established this, you found your real estate agent, he's done some other deals with other people in the market, and is there, let's say you got a little bit of your money lined up, is there anything that an investor can do themselves to establish more credibility with a broker?
Well, having the resources, the cash is going to be, you know, cash is king because yeah. a lot of times people are wanting to do it and they don't really have the financial wherewithal to carry through market shifts. So that's going to be key. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people get into real estate investing, again, as an accidental investor. Like they'll buy another house and then they can't sell the house they're in, so then they rent it out. So then that's kind of an accidental investor, I find. So that may not be the right property for a rental. It may have been a great house to live in, but it may not be a great property for rental because it could be the rents aren't in line for the market. I see this frequently because I'm in a high cost of living area and people are like, oh, I'll just rent it. I'm like, you really would be better off selling it and putting that money into two smaller properties where you get a higher rental. You have more of a pool of a tenant opportunity and there's just less risk associated when you could spread it out among lower price points. And so that's one of the aspects of getting into real estate is like one of the first things that I see happen to people. So when you're selecting what you're going to buy, it's key to do the portfolio out. So then you see you can project out, but you also have to project out things like what you were talking about, vacancy and improvements, because I find that that's the other thing that gets the first time investor, they're not prepared at all when the landlord, you know, the tenant calls. And you can get property managers for it, but still at the same time, you have to have the money to fix it. So it's not, the property manager's not going to pay to fix it. The property manager's just going to manage it for you. So I think that the thing that I would say is just to see the whole perspective and not just see the one aspect of it. But the one thing I will share on the positive side, because I want everybody to go, I'm a firm believer in investing. Real estate, if you think about it, if you were to go and borrow to buy a single family property or something, even like a duplex or whatever, let's say you,
like house hacking, right?
Yeah, that's house hacking, which is like, I'm a firm believer in house hacking. My daughter's house hacking in Austin. It's a brilliant strategy. If you think about that, you could buy an asset and put 20, 25% down, and yet you get to own the entire asset. You get to own the rights to the entire property. Whereas if you were to invest in other assets, you would have to
a stock.
Right. You'd have to have all the money in, even if you bought options in it, if it gets called, you're going to have to pay for it. So you get to own the entire asset. And generally, in most cases, the rent covers the mortgage and the payments. And then that tenant's paying down the rest of the mortgage. You're basically getting 100% for 20 to 25%. So in terms of strategy, I'm like going, why don't more people do this? Because residential has a fundamental human need. Everybody has to live somewhere. And because of that, it's like other fundamentals. It's always going to be there. It's so if you buy right, which is back to having advisors that help you see where you can buy that has good tenant pools that are quality. And when I say quality, I'm always looking for good jobs and good income, right?
Job growth.
Because if they have a good income, then the likelihood of them, even if something were to happen, they're still going to have the ability to earn income. And so good credit score. I would rather get a little bit less rent and get a quality tenant. Because I've worked with plenty of people who like, no, we'll take them. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. But they do it anyhow because they get a higher rent. And then those often are the ones that cause problems in the long run. Because I've worked with hundreds of investors. And that is the rule of thumb across the board. If somebody's having difficulty or doesn't have good credit, there's a reason for it. Just is.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people right now, they're doing the lease options. And I was talking to a gentleman and he was saying, like, I mean, I've heard this from different people, so I'm not too sure. But one gentleman was saying that when they're doing the lease options, nobody ever really is able to purchase the house after like 1 or 2 years. They always, I don't know if it's default, but they just kind of also renew the lease and they just they just keep like leasing it to kind of own. And then another gentleman, he was on the podcast, he said that his lease options, he finds people that are like 70% more likely to take them. So I'm not necessarily too sure, but I know that there are a lot of options out there, and having good quality tenants is in any form.
I mean, even if you're commercial, even if you're commercial, you shopping center, you know, small office spaces or whatever, your tenant is going to be who is in your property. And so having the quality tenant, that's what I would recommend if you're starting out. Now, once you have some experience under your belt and you want to branch out into other areas, but if you're starting out, I would recommend going with the quality tenant.
Awesome. I love it. Well, Karen, I appreciate you sharing all your knowledge. I want to transition to the final three closing questions. First question is, if you were to regift a book, what is your favorite book to regift?
So The Miracle Morning, and there is A Miracle Morning for Real Estate Agents by Hal Elrod. And the idea is you start your day right, then the rest of the day goes well. So it's got great mind rememberer for your morning savers. And so you can follow that. You can do it as little as 6 minutes. It's also part of the people who read Real Estate Success in 5 Minutes a Day. One of my books, sometimes they'll read that as part of their morning routine to get ready for the mindset of doing real estate.
Mm. And if somebody wants to get your book, where's the best way to get that? The 5 minute.
Amazon, absolutely, for Real Estate Success in 5 Minutes a Day, Commit to Get Lead, 66-Day Channel Challenge. There's also Audible. And if you want bulk, I can get those to you from on the website.
Good.
Which is the number 5 Minute Success.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll include that in the show notes as well. Second question, if you were to give a TEDx talk, what would it be on and why?
Well, I have actually given a TEDx talk.
Oh!
A TEDx, TEDx open mic in Wilmington, Delaware last year. So my talk was on flip time, love life, because I find that myself and a lot of people, they reach a certain level of success and they look around and they go, okay, is that it? And so the idea is with flipping time, is to not flipping houses. Somebody's like, oh, is that flipping houses? I'm like, yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. Flipping time is to put meaningful work first, or living the life you love first, because then everything else gets better. Many people wait till later in life or until certain milestones in their life or success or investment career and to do those things. And I'm like, well, you may run out of time. If you do it first, then everything else in life will get better.
Mm, I'm going to have to watch that now.
Yes. You can see that on the website, 5 Minute Success.
Okay, cool. Very cool. The third question, what is a pain point or weakness you face in your business right now?
Pain point is right now we have this abundance of opportunity, which is phenomenal. Again, back to me having the knowledge of being through several market cycles and you're like going, okay, is this a tipping point, or is this like, because we haven't had any appreciation for so long, we're just in a major catch-up mode. So the pain point is recognizing how to handle abundance, because that has its own opportunities, but also to help people advise them well at these times, because if we are still trending up because we have a lot of backlog and appreciation that the market is due, which is true, or are we, you know, trending at the top and prepare for market shifts?
If there were to be a tipping point, what would you guess it would be? Like an event, or I don't know if I'm phrasing this correctly. What could you see causing it to shift?
Usually events start it. Uh-huh. So for our market area, because I'm in the Washington, D.C. metro region, we're very highly closely connected to anything that happens in the government. So some events that have happened in addition to 9/11, which was a kind of a negative event in the beginning, and then it turned into a positive event, and that can happen. You can have both sides. We've also had sequestration. We've had tax reform. We've had government shutdowns. And those are things that you can't necessarily even predict, even though some people try. The positive events, though, we had the Amazon HQ2 announced for the region. And so you have both of them happening almost all the same time, and both have aspects to it. And so constantly being mindful of where we are in a market cycle is, I wouldn't call it a pain point, but it is something that is like a tension where you're, when you are advising people, you want to be able to help them see, make good decisions.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Karen. I'll make sure to include all those show links. Everybody that's listening, you can click those, and those will be in the show notes there for you. Karen, thank you very much for being on the show. We'll catch you on the next go-round.
Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to Real Estate Journeys, guys. Your support is greatly appreciated. And if you found this content to be enjoyable, valuable, or entertaining in any way, please head on over to iTunes, subscribe, leave a comment, and a 5-star review. Peace!